to show 7 of Gen Tech, Teaching and Learning in Generative Technology. This is a podcast where we explore different tools and resources to use technology in schools in ways that enable students to create products to generate their own content or their own ideas and understanding, as opposed to more drill and kill software or prepackaged academic software. I'm Mark Hofer from the faculty in the School of Education at the College of William & Mary.
This is Steve Whitaker. I'm on the faculty at the Curry School of Education at the University of Virginia, just up the road from Mark.
And I'm Michael Kelly, and I'm a doctoral student at the University of Virginia with Steve.
And we should point out that Mark also has a connection to our program, so I don't know what that means, but I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, just a full disclosure.
That's exactly right.
I also graduated with from UVA as well.
With honors, we should point out.
Oh, yes, yes.
Pictures on the wall.
Wall of shame, that's exactly. Today we are going to explore student publishing, both using more traditional desktop publishing tools as well as some of the web-based applications that would enable students to publish their work or ideas in a variety of formats.
It's a nice topic, I think, as a very good example of a generative technology. It's a nice contrast to sitting in front of a typing tutor or a math drill software. And it's a really kind of wide open field, I think, when you talk about student publishing. So I'm excited to talk about it today.
Yeah, there's lots of ways to get at it, too, I think. So it should be interesting and informative.
So maybe we should start with a working definition, just so we're limiting ourselves a little bit in terms of what it is that we are talking about. And when I think about student publishing, I'm not really thinking about publishing in the sense of publishing poetry, for example, or that submission process that you have to go through to get a book published. And I'm not thinking about creating slideshows and something like PowerPoint either. For me, the student publishing is really the creation of something that can be developed into a print application, like a poster, or a student newspaper, or maybe a small student book or pamphlet, but nothing in the truly professional sense.
I think of audience, the element that there's actually people reading, and there's a sense of a degree of authenticity in that regard. That when I think of publishing, I think of both sides of that.
Yeah, that's a great addition. I mean, in addition, so you're not just talking about something a student is writing and then turning into a teacher.
Right. It's a wider audience, and that in it. And may have more or less, exposure, but that's a component that goes into the thinking of the activity or the generation of material.
And I think the authenticity also comes in the format in which the students are creating.
Right.
It's one thing to write a paper; it's another thing to create a newspaper.
It is,
it's just something more engaging, and I think also a little bit more open-ended, a little bit more room for creativity and exploration in these, kinds of desktop publishing tools.
Yeah, and as Michael alluded to, probably students going into that with the idea that there is going to be someone besides a teacher who's reading it too, so there is an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that changes the way students approach creating.
Absolutely. And this is not anything new. Teachers have done this for a long time. I know when I taught high school social studies, kids literally cut and pasted, not, electronically.
That's right, from newspapers.
Yeah, from newspapers, and, they would bring in typed up articles that they would, cut into columns and paste and create a newspaper from another time period or whatever. Mm-hmm. So these are things that have always been done. The digital value added, I guess, would be in terms of having a more professional kind of look and feel about it,
sure,
as well as the ability to share it with a much wider audience, getting to the point that you made, Michael.
And I'd throw in there also just the fact that the digital aspect does sometimes save some time. It allows you for correcting mistakes before a final product's created. And
great point. And also, I'm sorry, Steve.
I was just going to add in that collaborative aspect too.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah,
that's where
go.
I was going to.
So what are some examples of some student publishing tools that can be used? And let me throw one in there just to start with sort of the traditional. And as they say, there's nothing wrong with that. Microsoft Word is a perfectly legitimate example of something that allows for student publishing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other tools out there, and I think one of the nice things that we see about generative technology is that there are new examples of technology that are emerging that really require less of a threshold, as Mark might say, to be able to use them. So if you have Microsoft Word, that suggests that you have each student at a different computer with Word installed on it, and Word is not a free piece of software. It does require a little bit more understanding to get in and to start using it, but there is Word. But there are also, to complement Word, something like Writely, which we've mentioned, and Writely is that online word processor that you can use in your browser, which doesn't require an installation.
Right.
And has lots of opportunities or avenues for publishing, either collaborating with individuals or groups, posting to a blog. And there's some functionality that I think is built in and again, low threshold.
I think that low threshold is a really strong point to argue that maybe you'd like to start a student publishing project using Word or Writely. I think learners don't need to know a whole lot in order to get into those tools and use some of the intermediate features of them. So there isn't much that you need to do to prepare learners to use tools like that, unlike maybe some of the other tools. But the trade-off, again, is that you need the space and the time. You need access to a computer lab as well as the software itself.
And two, I guess one thing that is worth mentioning, that with those tools, the learning curve is small, easy to get in and get started, but you are limited, especially more so with Writely than with Word or something like that, in terms of formatting capabilities.
Right.
So if you're trying to lay out, if you're doing a newsletter or something like that, that's really not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're writing a letter or something like that, of course, that's not a problem. But if you're trying to lay out a newspaper or a magazine or something like that, you need a little bit more functionality than maybe is available in something like Writely.
Right. And there, there are some alternatives out there to Word and Writely and Zoho Writer, and I know you guys have been playing around with a couple of those tools this week.
Yeah, I took a look at Scrapblog, and it deals primarily with images, so it kind of goes into the area of slideshows, perhaps, or an image. Way to present images and things, but you can insert text and you can create a whole host of things for publishing purposes. I played around with it in the sort of one of the activities or something that came up as I was looking at thinking about what could you do with this other than just string some making a slideshow.
Mm-hmm.
It lended itself to writing activities, language arts, or certainly. I tend to think of ESL and that kind of thing, but combining writing with images and presenting them and offering a way to an interactive way for students to comment on them or describe the images and then play a little game based on a series of pictures, let's say.
It seems like the idea there, you can upload a limited number of images, maybe one or two per page, is that right? And then you provide text below that.
Yes, and things that you can move things around. I mean, it's pretty, click and drag, PowerPoint, and when you're working on a slide, it works very much that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it publishes it to a URL, and it's a little sluggish, not quite as intuitive as you might hope. But but they provide a lot of images and things that are sort of things to dress up your page with that are in there, and you can always upload things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then it publishes it to a URL.
And that is accessible by other people, but don't you have to have a code to get in to see that? Or is that just to edit it?
That's just to edit it.
Okay.
And again, it's typical registration of, email and
right.
name, and then you're in.
Okay.
But
the basic idea there is that you can go in and create and then publish something that anybody can see just with the URL, the address.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And Mark, you used BubbleShare.
Yeah, actually, I looked at that. Did we want to talk about PosterMaker?
Well, yeah, we should.
I think that's a good good sort of segue. Another tool that we looked at was PosterMaker, and it's interesting. You create a class, a teacher. I think you can just do it just on the fly, just on your own. But if a teacher wants to, is that true, Michael?
Yes. In fact, I set one up and like you said, on the fly.
Oh, okay, great. So
you don't have to be an affiliated teacher with a school code or anything like that. You can just establish, an account, and you're the teacher, and you have students, and you give them the class code and that kind of thing.
And then, since when they log in, they type in the class code and they go directly to the space where the teacher can then see all the students' work, I guess. And it's, and they, it's a little... Oh, go ahead, Michael.
Excuse me, their own posters. And it's... the teacher sees all the posters that get created in that class, and as individual students work on posters, again, they get published, and there's a URL that others can go and view. Mm-hmm. And if they involve collaborators, then they share like the poster number. You know, there's a code for that poster, and then you can, if you have that, you can get in and edit it as well. It's not editable from the web, like a wiki, let's say.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's possible just with a simple poster number and class code.
You basically just log in and are able to contribute.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it is really nice from the teacher's end that all the students' work is shared together. There's, you know, it's a little bit more closed, I guess, community maybe than some of the other tools, which I think is appealing probably for some teachers in school districts.
Right.
It is much more cookie cutter though than mm-hmm. something like Scrablog or BubbleShare or some of the others, that the students basically have a list of fields
right. That
you know, they need a title for their poster that they type in a text field, a subtitle if they choose. They have the option to upload an image or mm-hmm. put in the URL of an image of something that's already hosted online, and then content links, I think, and then content
right. That
they up to 9,000 words, I think, was the limit on the poster.
And
that basically is it.
And although those are definitely limitations, but I think at the same time, every once in a while, that's not necessarily a bad thing. That saves an awful lot
Absolutely.
Of time in terms of latitude and the time it would take if students had a, you know, a wider range of options to explore.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, and if you're a teacher, like say you're a math teacher, and you want your students to research famous mathematicians.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, each student creates a poster for their mathematician with links to examples of the importance of their work or whatever. And, you know, it's a nice collection, a little archive, almost like a little virtual exhibit that way.
Yeah, I thought about it. I mean, Mark, I think a couple weeks ago you talked about the idea of building this online museum, and that really seemed to lend itself to this idea of, you know, consistent exhibits, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But, but with the
content. Right. Yeah, it does have that consistency, which is
right.
nice.
Right.
So it's a nice alternative. And it'd be much quicker. I mean, that's something that students could easily do, assuming they prepare ahead of time, could easily do in a 50-minute class period. They could create their poster and be done and save it and move on with life.
And those are pretty well lent to printing, I think, unlike some of maybe
Good
what
point.
BubbleShare can do.
Especially
yes,
the poster one. And
right.
I also noticed in there that there's a section of that site that's for designing worksheets.
Mm-hmm.
So you can create web worksheets or stuff that gets printed out, you know, ostensibly related to the various posters and things that students are doing. But it also has this, you know, web-based worksheet generator and that looked like it could be pretty interesting for those purposes.
One of the things that I like about all of these tools is that in order to use them in the classroom, you know, you don't have to think about a new way of approaching some of the lessons that maybe you've already used in your classroom. As Mark indicated earlier, I think some of the advantages of the digital really just are related to how easy it is to have students access the tools and learn to use them. But I don't see any of these necessarily as forcing you into a new way of thinking about teaching. So you can do some of the old standby projects that have always been great for students in classrooms. And Mark, you came up with the idea of this virtual exhibit where people or students pick up, you know, a mathematician and do a display about him. And in social studies, we always did the old broadsides when we were studying American history. And so you
Perfect
can use
example.
One of these tools to come up with a broadside poster to talk about some of the rights that are being infringed upon or something like that.
Right. And again, you know, there's the trade-off.
This
is very efficient and quick, creates very similar kinds of look and feel.
So we've got a couple of examples on the plate there, and I'm wondering if you guys can think of some other things that, you know, teachers have traditionally done with student publishing that might be either made easier or at least done in the same manner with the digital tools.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, activity that's often a first week of school activity, mm-hmm. this is timely, for... especially elementary students would be to sort of introduce yourself
kind
of thing. They could do a poster about themselves. A teacher could, you know, pass around a digital camera so they could, you know, do their pictures. This is actually nice because it is a closed community more so than some of the others. And I think I think the teacher has the option to restrict them and make it private. Is that true, Michael?
Yeah.
I know that you were the one that set it up. So, you know, that might be a nice way for kids to, and maybe they share some of their favorite links or, you know.
And you get over some of the worry about net safety and security.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's a great idea. And another one that always comes to mind that I think could actually be made even more, to use the word authentic again, is the idea of a student newspaper or a student, you know, magazine. Especially if you can assign one student to be an editor and other students to have individual story assignments that you could do over a particular topic. And, you know, I'll go back to history as a standby, but you can imagine asking students to take historical perspectives during a given time period and write some articles that might be in a current magazine from the time. And then use something like Writely to do that collaborative aspect where students can work on them individually, but at the same time maybe do a little review of each other's articles. And that's the kind of project that I don't see happening in just a single class period, obviously, but that could be a project that lasts several weeks, and students could do some of the work at home, especially since they don't need the software to install on their own computers. And for something like Writely, don't even need a broadband internet connection.
Yeah, good point.
So I really like that collaborative aspect of things.
And this is the kind of project or kind of work that you could, you know, shuffle all the kids down to the computer lab.
Sure.
You could cycle kids through one computer in the back of the classroom, or if you're, you know, fortunate enough to have a little pod of computers in the back or a set of laptops, or this is something that's very flexible because
right.
It's web-based.
And especially
very quick and easy.
Especially if you're letting them do a lot of the legwork in more traditional ways, doing the research in the school's library, and then just getting what they need to bring to the computer lab.
I would strongly advocate.
Me too.
You know, just in my experience, even putting aside the efficiency, you know, that making the most of your time on the computers.
Right.
You need to put that aside. The quality of the work is usually better if they spend more time. Steve has a great thing when he's teaching somebody how to use some software to look down at your shoes. If, you know, when he's telling you something important, just not looking at the computer screen, you know, look at your shoes. And it's great because I think you get so caught up with what you're seeing on the screen that, you know, it's nice to take a step back. And so I think that principle is the same for work like this as well.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think people are a little bit more efficient when they're working in ways that they're used to working. The library for many students is still a go-to, especially in elementary school, as opposed to trying to use some kind of online archive or database. So, yeah, I mean, and I also like the idea of teaching these research skills outside of a tool that might get in the way of understanding what the skills are about.
One thing that appeals to me about the student publishing, some of the, you know, these apps that we're talking about is that they seem to lend themselves to more opportunities for cross-discipline, you know, studies. In other words,
great point.
You know, if I'm, you know, doing a science report or working with, you know, Virginia Birds or whatever, and I ever have to do write-ups, you know, traditionally there's walls and there's hard to get across those boundaries. But if you have stuff that's web-based and they're publishing them out there, they're much more readily, you know, tossed over to the other areas,
right.
And I think are much more easily manipulated to the extent that you can develop these you know, more cross-discipline connections that I think make for a richer experience. You know, in my English or my writing or certain studies classes, I can, you know, we can cross over and be put out on the web and publishing in that way. You can more easily achieve that, I think.
That's a great point. I think that you know, interdisciplinary kind of work is very much advocated by educators,
right.
But it becomes difficult in middle schools where kids are switching classes for different subjects,
right.
And high schools as well. I just, you know, recently did a project in a middle school where the students were working with a social studies teacher and a language arts teacher that were literally across the hall from each other. But because we were students were saving things to discs and there were four classes, you know, it just got to be such a headache that collaboration became very difficult. But using something like Writely, that eliminates that big challenge we had.
Well, it really just eliminates one of those problems of physical resources and trying to keep track of actual objects.
Yep.
It gets rid
of
that, gets that out of the way, and lets you jump right into the idea of that you're going to be sharing content with other people too. And I think that's a huge point, Mark and Michael, that you guys bring up.
You know, and one more thing to tag on with Writely in particular is it has a couple of other great features. One being that the students or the teacher can go back and look at different versions of the document.
Oh, yeah.
So, for example, the teacher might be able to look back and see who edited the document to what extent, how many times.
Right.
You know, we all know when students work in groups, going to spend some students, you know, do a lot of the work, and more students just, you know, follow along. Sure. So this would give more accountability. You know, the teacher would see exactly what the specific students' contributions
were. That's a great point, Mark. And I'd never really thought about using the tracking features to see who's doing the contributions. I think that's really great. And I guess I was thinking about it in terms of being able to restore something if
absolutely,
you know, if someone either deliberately or most likely accidentally, mm-hmm. you know, deleted a document or cleared it out and then exited the browser.
But yeah, if it's erased from the disk, it's gone.
Exactly. Or if the disk is damaged, or if it gets stepped
right,
on
exactly.
your backpack. And, it, you know, I have some great memories of losing disks myself over the years. When I wrote my dissertation, I still used disks to keep it on, as well as storing it in about a dozen other places. But I guess it gets to that idea of sort of distributed data architecture, which the Web 2.0 mm-hmm. is all about.
Yep. One more thing that's sort of a Web 2.0 kind of connection with Riley that I find great is just the ability to, you know, the teacher could basically subscribe to
exactly.
each of the documents the kids are working on. So in an RSS reader, they could see what has been updated when, and so they don't have to go out to check all the different documents that comes to them.
They don't have to check all the documents. They don't have to worry about emailing. And you know, just for that matter, parents can do the same thing.
Absolutely. Right. Great point.
So, you know, you're right, Mark. All of those little Web 2.0 added benefits really do a little bit more than just sort of at face value. I think they make that life a little bit easier for a teacher, for example.
And I think it's a good point that might be worth extending even a little bit further. A lot of these Web 2.0 apps are maybe not that much better in terms of functionality or whatever than, you know, software counterparts are doing it, you know, traditional ways in the classroom. But in terms of management and the teacher being able to keep on top of all these things and monitor what's going on and be able to provide feedback, offer tremendous advantages over some of the alternative ways to do the same type of work.
I agree, and I think that's probably something that we could say of a lot of the different things we've been talking about on this show.
Absolutely.
And I think probably all three of us agree that the technology for its own sake isn't worth bringing in, but when it does give you an advantage, like even just something like speed or ease of checking on student work, it's worth considering using.
Indeed.
So we've talked a lot about the advantages, and I'm wondering if in a couple minutes that we have left, we could talk briefly about some of the red flags that a teacher might need to be aware of when it comes to student publishing, but especially digital publishing.
Well, the example I offered, the Get to Know Me mm-hmm. example for grade school, of course, if that's public, that's, you know, a major concern.
Right.
Some of the other things, if, you know, if they're creating a newspaper from a time period or something, you know, I wouldn't think that the safety issues might be as relevant. But certainly in that Get to Know Me kind of activity, that would be a concern.
And I'd probably throw in something to the effect of, you know, if you're using Writely or if you're using Zoho Writer or Scrap Blog or Project Poster, then by default you're having students go to the internet. And although they might be sitting at a computer when they're working in Word that has internet access, they're going to be less apt to fire up a browser. Whereas if they begin in Writely, the browser's open, and especially if you use something like Firefox that has tabbed browsing, you need to be aware that your students are probably not going to be focused solely on Writely. With the web open in front of them, that's a temptation that's worth thinking about.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
And that's the biggie, I think. You know, that's the one that comes up, bubbles up to the top most often. You know.
So there you have it.
What I want to know, maybe this is another conversation. When I think of student publishing, I can't help but one of the first things that comes to my mind is blogging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just a huge area in and of itself, or
I think you could certainly come up with a definition of student publishing that involves blogging. I mean, that's enormous, and that is publishing in that traditional sense. For me, considering when I'm talking about desktop publishing, I wouldn't consider something like blogs.
Okay.
But because I think in part it's the idea that, yeah, blogs let you write for an audience, but they might not let you print something out, although I don't know how important that is to the definition. It just seems like blogs are... Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I know. Finish. I'm sorry.
It just seems like blogs are a slightly different creature than... I get, well, you know, here's what it is for me. Writely, Zoho Writer, Scrap Blog, Bubbleshare, Project Poster, I'll let you create a document. And it seems like mm-hmm. a blog is not a document. It's this continually evolving kind of
place
which certainly is a form of publishing, and certainly there are discrete chunks to blogs, and those are those posts, but it seems like there's not a finite beginning and end to a blog.
Okay.
Well, yes and no, I think. Okay. I just came across an example, pulling together some examples for my class this fall, on a historical buyer that someone had put together a blog on their experience in immigrating to the United States. Mm-hmm. And so the posts, you know, are dated, you know, 1897, you know, May, you know, whatever. And so it is chronological, which lends itself to a blog, of course. It's a series of entries that a diary would be. So I think it depends on the type of document you're creating.
Sure.
This I thought was a great, and you know, what they did is they set up the blog so that it was all of the entries were displayed. So in other words, there was one long document.
So
that you could print out.
So could you look at blogging maybe as an example of student publishing, but maybe for projects that are a little bit less focused on a particular you know, thing to turn in and more of a long-term project, or at least a more involved project? Or Mark, do you see you know, teachers and students being able to use blogs for things akin to your idea of putting scientists on posters too? I guess you could, couldn't you?
I think I could. I think it just depends on the teacher, you know, their
sure.
imagination. How
and I think it depends on how you perceive blogs. We very much, you know, think of them as this sort of ongoing, this, you know, the latest stuff at the top. But if you thought of it as this one site, this one address, as this series of mm-hmm. 10 posts that are, like, you know, that were created for the intent of, you know, appearing like journal entries, but, it, you know, just taken as an individual whole and not think of it as something ongoing like we typically think of it, and just view it as the series because of the format, because of the technology that allows for that to be produced in that. I think it does depend. You could do that.
I guess, too, even at its simplest, you could look at a blog engine as a way to just showcase content.
So right.
Students don't necessarily have to compose right there in the blog, but what they can do is have links to their posts, or they can copy and paste what they've written into the blog. And then, as Mark was saying, the teacher gets to take advantage of the RSS feeds that
right.
are there and commenting. So I guess I've been converted to your way of thinking.
I mean, I think with any of these things, it works or it doesn't work based on how the teacher decides to use it.
Okay.
You know, and the teacher, because they know their students, because they know the context of their classroom, they are in the best position to figure out how to use it. I think it's the key is to try to understand what's the potential and how does it work and is it accessible and all that. And if so, then I think teachers can really figure out those connections, I think, that best work for their own students.
So one thing that I'd like to do, we'll post a few examples of not only the tools like Writely and Scrapblog and Blogspot, but some of the examples of student work that are out there too. So we'll put a link up to the Immigration Experience blog that Mark was talking about and a few others. And at least I would like to put in a plea that if anybody out there has some examples of student work that they've done in their classrooms that are online, send it our way. Either email it to us, or give us an audio comment, or post a comment on the blog.
And not just the samples, but how it worked.
How it worked,
exactly, especially.
Maybe even more importantly, right, how it worked and some of the things that you learned from those experiences, because there are some fantastic projects that are out there. I wonder if next week a logical continuation of this conversation might be to look at digital student presentations and presenting tools, both online and in software form.
Yeah, that would be good. I think there's a few more points to touch on with this. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, until next week, then, I'm Steve Whitaker.
I'm Mark Hofer.
And I'm Michael Kelly.
So long.